This is the Top Agents Playbook podcast, episode number 14.
Welcome to the Top Agents Playbook podcast, your source for the very best tools, tips, and ideas used by real estate's top performers. Now here's your host, Ray Wood.
Well, hi everybody, and welcome back to the show. Edgar Natolo's Nat Group stays ahead of the competition by always innovating. By embracing technology and setting up effective business units, Edgar has succeeded in perfecting the virtual office, which frees up agents, opens up options, and brings down expenses. I really like Edgar's energy and the way he and his team stick to regimented prospecting routines. You'll discover his secret to consistent success and how to develop a great business culture. Edgar challenges accepted ways and is leading the charge as a brilliant example of how the virtual office runs on a day-to-day basis, including how he keeps his team focused on dollar productive activities and how he uses the very best cloud-based systems to provide advanced client care. Whether you're a rookie just starting out, an experienced pro, or a team leader or business owner looking to take things to the next level, this interview will open up your mind to the possibilities and get you thinking, what if? Well, hi, everybody, and welcome back. I'm with Edgar Natolo from the Nat Group in Queensland. Good morning, Edgar.
Good morning, Ray. How are you doing over there?
I'm very well, thank you, buddy. Hey, let's get into it. Tell me about your business.
Okay, our business. Our business started in 1997, so I've been in it for quite a while.
Right.
And I think in 1997 we set something up as a small agency, and we worked until, I can basically say, in 2004 is when John McGrath and I did a boot camp in Noosa, and it was just a small little thing, like a brainstorming session. We're talking about boutique agencies, and everyone knows where he's gone to now.
Yes.
And he was well on his way anyway, so we sort of started following the same path. And I realized back then that even though I started in 1997, I met in 2004, those 7 years, you know, I was in real estate for 7 years, but to be honest, I probably had 2 years experience, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So I knew what I was doing, but I didn't know there was more to it, and there was, you know, systems and you could get more and leveraging and stuff like that. The things that no one gets taught, because I think these days as well, they basically say, here's a desk, here's your certificate, here's a phone, go for your life.
And here's a month.
Yeah.
Get busy.
And here's a month or 3 months. And, yeah. And I think now they give you 3 months. And
okay.
If you don't perform, you're out. And I thought, well, yeah, there's no one. Luckily, I had John and Matt Steinway to sort of guide me along. And these days, people are so lucky. They've got people like you in this podcast and stuff like that to learn from, I guess, what we went through and not have to spend 7 years doing what we did. They can spend 1 year and get there. So that's where we basically started. And then we've grown from that to covering from Brisbane to South Brisbane to Gold Coast. But there was quite a few trials, tribulations and things to learn along the way, that's for sure.
What were some of the things you learned from John?
Things I learned from John was there's probably five big things. Actually, one thing I learned from Peter Gilchrist, to be honest,
right,
which is we've discussed this before, was the mindset. It was like five major things that I had to learn, but the first thing I thought was mindset and actually growth. Well, that's one of the things that we got from that Noosa trip was, you know, grow your business, boutique agency, go paperless in the future, virtual agents. You know, the days of window cards and offices were gone. And this was back in 2004 when everything was still there.
Yep.
So you can see how we sort of predicted what was going to happen, but maybe we're 10 years, you know, in front. So,
well, 2004, the internet, I remember 1994 going to the library in South Yarra in Melbourne. Because they were holding an open demo display featuring the internet, and it was 1994, and the guy couldn't get it going. He started, but Netscape was trying to load, right? It was going click, click, click down
on the
page. So you're talking, you're only talking 10 years after that, and now we're 10 years further or 11 years down the track, so it's been quite a wild ride. But sorry, I interrupted. Back to 2004.
No, that's okay. And you're absolutely right. Like it was early technology, and we sort of predicted what it was going to be and what the future was going to be like, you know, and how do we get there? And I suppose that's part of my journey and his journey as well. But one thing I learned about, you know, obviously with the expansion and stuff I was going to plan, was the keeping your mind and positive, which is a hard thing when you're trying to grow a business and if you're a sales agent or even a principal, because you have to wear all the hats. You have to be the accountant, the lister, the sign putter upper, the rental manager. You have to do everything essentially.
Yes.
And I understand that you can't invest too much at the start. So I had to wear all the hats. And, with that came a lot of challenges and a lot of heartbreaks and, you know, tears some nights and close to bankruptcy because you're on the brink and you're selling stuff to keep the business open. So I understand how people are like when they first start.
So just
trying to, I think, wire your mind in a way that you understand you're going to go through this, but if you keep your focus on what your end goal is and you write that down, and that's another thing I got was writing down your goals, and John puts his in the shower. I have mine on my wall.
Yep.
You know, what you focus on expands, and I got that from Oprah Winfrey. So if you focus on rental growth, you'll get rental growth. If you focus on listings, you'll get listings. So whatever you focus on expands. So trying to understand, I'm going to go through some times, I'm going to go through some hard times, but if I focus and get through it, then it'll be okay. Just to rewiring my mind from not focusing on the negative and getting down, because we can all get beaten down every single week with clients and, and situations, to know that, hey, it's going to be okay, you know, tomorrow. And it's just a numbers game. And when you're going to go to, you're contacting 100 people, you are going to get 90 no's and five, you know, abuses, but you're going to get five good yeses. So I had to understand that. And one thing I heard recently was that you got to understand, like a setback is actually not a bad thing. A setback is like a slingshot. The only way that you can propel forward is if you actually get set back. So imagine yourself pulling back on the slingshot, and then you just, you know, you fly forward. So a setback is a setup.
I really like that. I like that analogy, and I like that that logic and that way of thinking about it. Thank you.
Okay. So that's what I learned. You know, you get set back, you learn, you focus, you restructure, and you just fly past that. It's just an obstacle you can get through. So that was one of my major things, was mindset, getting through the heartache and stuff that you go through every week, whether you're a salesperson, a business owner, whatever. And staying focused and not giving up. That's one of the big things I learned. And yesterday was the same thing. Yesterday was a roller coaster ride in real estate. You know, I had a listing on the market that's a fantastic hot listing. And we've got that much activity and three offers and 20 people and 2,000 internet hits all in 1.5 weeks. And the owners decided, because it's got that much activity, that if they fix a few things, they'll get more money for it. So they took it off the market.
Lovely.
So that was a great thing. and then I had another listing that I missed out on because the agent said, because of the property managers, they can get easier access to the tenants and photos.
At this point, the rubber band on the slingshot's getting very tight.
Isn't it? But then to say that, so my assistant, and we'll probably cover that later, the EBU thing, the business units.
Yes.
She said to me what I say to everyone else, Eddie, it's a numbers game. We go through 100 people, you're going to get some, you're going to miss some. It's just, you have to accept it.
Yeah.
And I thought, that sounds like what I say. And then later in the day, we picked up a 550,000 listing at 4.4% commission, and another one at 370 at 3.85% commission.
Awesome.
So, you know, it was a roller coaster day, as they say, the ups and downs. So I just had to keep my, keep focused. But there was a time where I wanted to just go for a walk.
Yeah.
As everyone does.
Yeah. So, So your business, when you started, you went to multiple offices, and now you've I guess with the help of the digital revolution and some good software and a few other things, you've got a completely different business model now. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, absolutely right. So back in those days, so I think in 2004 is when, even though I understood the future, we still expanded to five offices. So we covered from North Gold Coast to South Gold Coast. We had five offices. And that was okay. That's when everyone went to offices. But I understood as we went on with the internet getting better, and then they brought out the, you know, the faster speeds and ADSL, and then realestate.com hit, and everyone started going to the browsers instead of to the web, to the window cards.
Yeah.
I understood that, you know, we're paying five lots of rent and five offices and receptionists, and it's just a waste when I can redirect those funds back into the digital space that everyone's into now.
Yes.
So for a few years, we operated five, and we did really, really well. But then I noticed there was a bit of a downward trend, and I didn't really need all that. We could basically virtualize the office, virtualize the staff, and just have one good spot with all the systems and technology there and just expand it. So we ended up amalgamating all those into one, which is a nice big waterfront office space in Hope Island. So it's huge. It's great.
Lovely.
And we're all cloud-based now. We're paperless and cloud-based, and that's helped us, you know, maximize profits, redirect those profits into a lot of online stuff and prospecting, which I can cover later, but creating a prospecting machine that helps the staff and the team just really, you know, pumping the leads. And like I said before, you know, leads to listings, and listings leads to leverage. So if you want to leverage your business, you need that.
Tell me about let's get into it now before we forget, because anything to do with prospecting, I'm sure everybody listening will want to know more. So can you tell me about your prospecting machine, as you called it?
I can. So one thing I learned in that when I did that, the Soul magazine year. So when the Soul magazine followed me for 1 year for that $1 million
I'm
year,
not sure everybody knows that. I knew about it, and I'll just mention it now. But how long ago was this? A few years ago.
So this is 2 years ago.
2 years ago, Soul magazine, which has that evolved into Elite Agent.
Correct. Yeah.
As a new magazine, they actually followed Edgar around for a year, and that's how I think that's how a lot of people in real estate know you or know about you. So I just thought I'd point that out.
No, that's okay. So you're right. So from that, it led to the conferences that I speak at. From the conferences, it led to the mentor program and the real estate community we got on Facebook. So it's all grown from there. But if we go back to that Soul magazine, who said, you know, Eddie, we want to follow you for a year, see what you do so people can learn. I thought, yeah, why not? So I dropped back from growing the business for a year and I went back into full-time selling. And I thought, okay, well, I really need to bump this up because I've got the pressure now. I've got magazines and we're doing videos and I think we did a few interviews and speaking things that if I'm going to do this, I've got to really immerse myself big time into this and make sure that I do it properly.
You got to walk and the talk.
Yeah. And, you know, and the only way that you, I suppose, you force yourself into growing, into doing things is by having a accountability person. So, you know, a lot of people get an accountability buddy. In my case, I had an accountability magazine. So if I didn't perform, it was going to be out there for the entire real estate industry to see.
Yeah, on display.
Yeah. So it was big pressure. So I did it. So I immersed myself. I thought, I've got to really get into my systems. I've really got to get into my prospecting. I've got to refine everything. And I tried to do it 3 months before. So I thought, okay, we'll start in October for my January launch. And I realized I had to create a prospect machine and create systems that would handle that. And we can cover that later. But I wanted to get to at least a 65 listing benchmark because I know the KPIs and the list to sell ratios were about 1 in 4 back then. So if I got 65 listings and maintained it there, I could guarantee myself getting 20 sales at least every month.
So this is carrying. This is not 65 listings for the year. This is carrying 65 consecutive exclusive listings.
Yeah, at any time, at any point in time.
Right.
So we had to maintain it. That. So if we sold if we sold 10, I have to replace it with 10.
Okay.
So you can imagine the pressure that I was under, but I understood the KPIs and numbers I needed to get to that figure was that. So that's what we had to do. And I created a prospect machine, which basically was, I can run through a few numbers if you want, but it was 20 to 40 phone calls. And I've got my EBU, so I did set up an assistant. I had one assistant that helped me do all the paperwork and processing and, you know, pest and building reports and open houses and all that. That's the only way we could open so many homes. But I had to do 20 to 40 phone calls, and my assistant had to do 20 to 40 phone calls. We tried to do 3 face-to-faces every single day, just meet buyers, meet sellers, go to a listing, just meet 3 people eyeball to eyeball. I think our target was to at least do 1 or 2 appraisals a day and list 4 to 6 properties a week. I think it was 4 to 6 properties or 4 to 8 properties.
Right.
Actually, I think our target was 8, so we had to try to get 8 every single week.
Okay.
Yeah, so to do that, I had to make sure that we got our letters. So, you know, I formulated 12 letters that would plant the seed, get a bit of information out there and just make them want to call me back. So I needed a database essentially, and then we moved to Locked On and put everything there. But I needed to database, get names, numbers, contact people, and always be speaking to someone every single day. So we've got a series of letters. I studied NLP for a while to understand how people's minds worked, to give them enough information that they want to call back. So we've done that. A few call to actions. Door knock, letterbox dropped. We did a heap of stuff. So essentially I've refined that now so that the people in my team who now join me, they don't have to do too much of that. The letters have been created. We've got a filing machine and printer. We mail merge. We do everything. So the letters are done. They don't have to touch it. It brings in our latest one brought in, I think it's in at 679, and in the first week it brought in 12 appraisals.
Awesome.
So I've created a good machine that's being refined.
Is that and that's a prospecting letter?
It's a prospecting letter, yeah. Okay. So it's essentially, it's a prospect. We're really big into the direct mail we buy the data from ownership companies.
Okay.
So if we can use the names and numbers, we'll go for that.
I'm going to put you on the spot and feel free to say no, but how would you feel about sharing that letter with our audience?
I will share one of them, but because I do have a mentor program, people pay for the program.
Okay.
They'd probably feel a bit unfair if I gave it out to everybody.
Just give us one as a tease, Edgar.
Yeah, I'll give you one as a tease. Okay. There is stuff that if people go to my website, edgarnaslow.com, there is some information, and anything that I can give away is on there.
I'll be posting your website into the show notes. So if you're listening to this in your car and you're madly looking for a pen, don't worry. All you need to do is go to topagentsplaybook.com and you look for this interview that I'm doing with Edgar, and all of the information that we talk about will be in there. So I'm big on going through the interview and finding out the links. And if there's something there that's missing, I know I'll get an email from one of our subscribers. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll give you a couple of the initial letters that I had, I suppose.
Okay.
I'll give you some of those.
Thank you.
And the other thing that we're big on was SMS. So once we got names and numbers, I realized that you have to stay in touch. So, you know, you needed 25 points of contact to make sure that, you know, a lot of our business is nurtured business. So we don't really get business straight away, but I understood it would take me 30 to 60 days to actually get their business back. So yeah, that's one thing I did, was understanding that if I started in October, if I didn't get my butt in the gear back then, in 60, 90 days' time, I wouldn't reap any benefits.
Gotcha.
So that's something I do say, that, you know, whatever's happening to you now, if you're selling a lot or you're not selling a lot, it's probably because 2 to 3 months ago, you didn't put in the prospecting effort, or you didn't put in the effort, and it's finally, you know, you're seeing those benefits and non-benefits right now. So we learned about keeping in touch. So I created all these contact points and trails. And a lot of it was either phone calls or SMSs, which through Locked On is fantastic because you can just type in your message and send it to your contacts in there. So we do a lot of that. We do phone calls, anniversary calls, SMSs, letters, and then you tie in with the usual, you know, just listed, just sold, and all that other stuff that you drop off in letterboxes.
Yep, yep.
So that's a bit of what our prospecting machine is, but it's okay. Mostly automated, and the staff don't have to do too much.
Okay. Talking about the staff and your team, if somebody comes sits down with you for an interview or a cup of coffee or however you do it, can you tell me what you're looking for in a potential recruit?
Great question there. What I'm basically looking for, I think, is a spark in their eyes, because I can teach them the systems. And to be honest, I don't really have to do too much because I've systemized the office. So we were saying before how I've got checkers for everything. They're color-coded into blue, red, and black. So blue dollar productive, red for the admin team, black for management. So I know that all they have to do is follow what I've already created, and the thing will work.
Yep.
So what I need is that spark in their eye. I need to know that they're just hungry. They're really hungry for success.
So you build a Ferrari, you need a Formula One driver to get it around the track.
Absolutely right. Yeah. Yep. So if I see that they really genuinely want to do it, and that they'll put in whatever effort it is, and they'll understand there's going to be a suffering period, because, you know, you're never going to reap really good success and benefits if you're not going to go through a bit of suffer.
Of course.
Same as going to the gym. You're not going to reap and have a fantastic body if you don't put in 6 months of hard work.
Yeah. Well, as Aaron Shiner says, you pay now, you pay later, but you'll pay.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you bleed in, what is it? You bleed in training so you don't, no, you sweat in training so you don't bleed in battle.
That's it. That's it. Sweat in training so you don't bleed in battle.
Absolutely. So I look for that spark in their eye. I want them to be hungry. I want them to know that I don't want someone that's going to come work from 9 to 5, because real estate's not a 9 to 5 job. It's a career. So I want someone who'll do what I did. Whatever it takes to be successful, you know, they'll do it. If they need to stay back, they'll stay back. If they've got to call and suffer, they'll call and suffer. And if I can see that they'll do that, you're pretty much halfway there already. The rest of it is just, I think, how their mind works. So I like the culture in our office is very family-based. And, you know, we'll do anything for anyone. You can leave hundreds of dollars on your desk, no one will steal it. That's the kind of thing that I want, that you can trust everyone here.
Yes.
So trust, rapport, the hunger in their eyes, and just the willingness to learn. If they do that, then I can take them, you know, to whatever part of their career they want to be.
Yeah, yeah. You spoke just now about your blue dollar activities, which I'm a big fan of that system. Blue is dollar productive. Can you define those? I mean, I know what they are, but just for those listening that aren't 100%, can you define what a blue dollar action is?
Absolutely can. So I learned this from, we were saying before how when I ramp things up, I had to create systems and understand and delegate. So when I got my assistants, I realized that I had to give work to them. I couldn't do it all myself.
Yep.
And I think I've got this a bit from Matt when he had his ideal weeks and ideal days.
Yes.
And thinking if you time set and you put your listing appointments in, you put your open houses in, and you come to work knowing what you're going to do and being proactive rather than coming to work and being reactive and reacting to whatever chaos happens. And that was the only way that I could make sure that my journey for that year was going to end up where I wanted to end up, by every day doing what I had to do. So then I learned about having to delegate things to my assistants, and I thought, what do I delegate? So then I had to learn about color coding. And what I learned was, for me anyway, I've color coded dollar productive stuff into blue. And dollar productive for me is seeing clients, doing listings, prospecting, doing appraisals, networking, anything that will generate an income at some point.
Directly leads to money.
Directly leads to money. Yeah. So, and you know, my focus isn't really on money. My focus is on sales and listings and stuff. Because, well, it's actually on leads, because I know if I get the leads, I'll convert most of those into listings. And if I get enough listings, I'll convert those to sales.
Yep.
So I'm really focused on just getting leads. So if I can, all my dollar productive stuff is that, which is what I teach the staff when they come in. You know, if you're going to join my team, I want you to go out there and I want you to list. I want you to talk to your past clients. I want you to keep in touch with your past buyers, go do appraisals, knock on some doors, whatever it is that you're actually meeting people. And that for me is dollar productive.
Okay.
I can grab a checklist out of my desk, but give me a sec. I'll just reach across to make sure I haven't missed anything. Here's a, you know, for example, here's an appraisal form I've got. So dollar productive is asking the listing questions. So everything's systemized. Like I said, we've got listing questions, taking a pre-list box to the client, adding the client to your contacts list, sending an SMS to say thank you, that kind of stuff. So it's keeping in touch and making sure you keep in touch. Yep. The red stuff, which is what I don't want any of my sales staff to do, and I color code my Outlook calendar as well. So if I ever find myself doing this red stuff, I say, no, I've got to give that to someone else. It's not going to make me money today. And red stuff for me is preparing the listing forms, or going to a pest and building report, or meeting a valuer out there, or going with the photographer sometimes, or, you know, in some cases, dropping off the pre-list box because we just got somebody to drop off, or processing the listings, or uploading properties. Anything that's really someone I can pay, someone that does $15 an hour work. Now, why would I do that? Otherwise, I'd become myself a $15 an hour assistant, which I don't want to be.
No.
So that's the red. And then what I call black work is working on the business. So it's management. It's working on your business plan. It's working on your systems. It's working on the business so that it grows and, you know, one day you can step out of it and it just continues to grow. And that's what I call black work.
Yeah, okay. If I'm listening to this and I'm new to real estate, or I'm in my first, say, 6 or 12 months, and things aren't going really according to plan, I'd like to be busier, I'd like to have more listings, I'd like to be enjoying more success, what would be your advice if we went and had a coffee and we're sitting one-on-one? What would you tell me?
Another really good question there, right? And there's a lot of newbies, and that's what I used to get a lot from there when I spoke at conferences, and everyone gets inspired and, you know, you get all excited. And they say, Ed, what do I need to do? I find myself in this rut, which is what I found myself years ago.
Yes.
No, because I just didn't know what to do, how to plan it. You know, I had the passion, but I just didn't have anyone to guide me. So I think one thing is, and it doesn't even cost you much these days, is to get yourself a mentor, get yourself someone, you know, on a program, listen to some of these podcasts, just get some ideas where you understand other people's journey and go, okay, because most of our top performers, we've all done the same thing. We've all experienced it, you know, had to do the same KPIs, the same things to get success. So I think, you know, first thing would be have a good patch. So choose a patch that's maybe about, well, I say between 12 to 2,000 homes.
Right.
Some people say less, some people say more. But for me, I say 12 to 200 because our systems can handle that. You don't have to work too hard to manage 2,000 homes. Choose a patch and then look at that patch and go and do a sign count every month and just see, does, you know, if you get 50 listings, do they sell any of them? So if they sell 25, then that's a 50-50 ratio. You know that if you list two houses, you're going to sell one. So you have to understand if that patch is going to make you the money you want. The other thing I think that people need to know to do is write down some goals or what they want to achieve, what their why is. And I think if you understand what your why is, what you want to get out of life, you can put a monetary value on that. So I know a lot of principals or whatever say, I need them to make 100,000 or 200,000, or they just make up a figure. But not everybody wants to earn a million or 200,000. Some people are happy on 70. Some people are happy on 2. Some people are happy on 500. So you need to understand what you want out of life, because I think then that helps you propel and gives you the motivation to, you know, go get those listings and leads.
Yes.
So once you know if you need, say, I'll just put a round figure, say you need $100,000. to make your life happy. And you say, okay, well, I need to, each sale is $10,000. I'm on a 50% commission basis. So each sale I actually get $5,000. I'll need to sell 20 houses this year to get to my $100,000. And with that, I can send my kids to school. I can go on a holiday. I can get that car. My mortgage is paid. We can eat well. So I think you have to bring it back to, if I get that, you know, what's my lifestyle going to be like? Say, okay, well, I need to sell 20 houses. What do I need to do? Well, we find a patch, you know, that half sell. So to sell 20, I need to list 40 homes. And you just find a patch that you can sell 40 homes in. And I think once you've done your numbers and you find an area that justifies those numbers, because there are some suburbs, and I know from my team that I had to tell them not to do those areas. You know, if they want to make $500,000, the whole gross commission for the entire area is only maybe $300,000. So you're just not going to get that from that spot. So you either need to add another patch, or you need to find a patch that will justify the income you want to make.
And when you're looking, I totally agree. And when you're looking for that patch, check the turnover, because we can go back a few years and we can see what kind of turnover, what number of sales there've been. I mean, you can have areas within a mile of each other where the turnover is twice as high in one area as it is in the other, and people will continue to focus on the wrong area, I find, for years, and then suddenly realize that the grass was greener not far away.
Absolutely, and you're absolutely right. Each suburb, especially on the Gold Coast, you have a suburb, but within that there are five little patches. There's a rental patch, and then there's an acreage patch, and there's a waterfront patch, and they're all different markets entirely. And I see that from the staff that we get. So we just had a lady join us, and she's doing Salisbury in Brisbane CBD. And then we've got Claudia doing Regent's Park and Browns Plains area, which is South Brisbane. Those areas there, they can list a house, and they can sell that within 2 weeks. They've pretty much got I'd even say like a close to 100% success rate if the owners want to sell. Claudia has only 3 listings in the entire year she hasn't sold yet.
Yep.
So her problem there is a prospecting problem. So I've got to help her generate leads to get those listings. So, you know, the turnover there is insane. Whereas on the Gold Coast, it's in certain patches, there's 1 in 4. So you have to list 4 properties to sell one. And some areas of waterfront, you only have to sell, you list 2 to sell one.
Yes.
So you're absolutely right. You need to find a turnover, because different areas are completely, you know, just different numbers.
I want to share something with you that I heard recently, and I really like it. You've probably already heard it, but when you mentioned goal setting, it triggered it in my memory, and it's this. Yeah. If you write down your goals and you review them daily, you're 40 times more likely to achieve them.
Yeah.
I love that. I don't know where on earth that came from, but it makes a lot of sense to me. And I actually heard it from somebody that who's an awesome performer, and he actually puts a diary note in his. I think it's about 9 p.m. before he goes to bed, and he just only takes him a couple of minutes, and he just reviews. Looks over them, but he's doing it on a regular basis. He tells me he's been doing that for 18 months, and he says it's amazing, but he and I've heard this before, he actually thinks it happens in his mind subconsciously while he's asleep, that he starts to think about these things. So whether or not that happens, I don't know, but I can tell you that his numbers are probably twice as good as they were 2 years ago.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. That's what I said before, what I learned years ago from when I heard just Oprah on a TV show. She said, what you focus on expands. I'm not sure what she talked about. And then I combined that with what John said about putting your goals, you know, on a sheet, laminated, and putting a shower if you have to. So every time you have a shower, you see it because it's there. And because you see it, you focus on it. Because you're focusing on it, it's just the universe just sort of draws that to you. And the way I basically explain this to people is that you know, like focusing on mindset, you can either focus to you choose the world you're living is what I say, you live in is what yep. I say a lot. You yep. either choose to live in a negative world or you choose to live in a positive world. You I have like to wire that. Your brain like different that. Ways.
Yeah,
and to explain that simply, when they go, oh yeah, sure, Eddie, but you know, you can just say that. I'm going, well, how about this? You go out and you smile at 10 people as you walk past them today and yep. see what reaction you get, and then you go and you yell at 10 people that walk past you today. So you're choosing to smile or to yell. See which one gets you the better results, and because. If you choose to smile at people, you'll get that back. And if you choose to yell at people, you're going to get the same back. So if you focus on whatever aspect of your business you want to do, for some reason the universe just attracts that back to you, and it comes back. So, you know, it's the same thing with negativity and negative people in your life. If you've got a negative person in your life, and sometimes it's family or friends, and, you know, we've all got that, sometimes you just got to distance yourself from that, because if you keep it in your life, it keeps attracting into your life. So you just got to push that away sometimes, unfortunately. So
how about this question then? Because I know somebody listening to that, I've just channeled their question in advance. But what if you're working in a really negative office for a boss you don't like?
Yeah. quite simple.
You like the way I did that? This way, yeah. You're being the bad cop, I'm being the good cop.
No, that's okay. And look, I've got a few friends that not even in real estate. So I've got a friend that's, I think she's in a government job. Actually, no, she's in a university job. So she's in Adelaide. So hopefully she's not a real estate agent anyway, so she won't hear this. But she's in a university job. She's getting paid really well. But her manager's an absolute, you know, I won't even say it. Yeah.
Yep.
And she goes home and she cries. And every time we go to Adelaide, she tells us about how she doesn't enjoy it. And I'm going, well, why don't you just leave? And she goes, lady, but I can't. I'm going, but why not? And then all the excuses come, and it's but this or but that. And then the buts have some friends like why and could not and can't. And I said, you choose the life you want to be. If you don't like that,
yeah,
go and do something else. It'll be a short-term suffering. But then imagine if you do a job that you love, then the hours don't matter. And really, if you have to take a pay cut, but you're going to enjoy it. It's not a job if you enjoy what you love.
We're only here once, eh? Really, I mean, you don't get another. You don't get another crack at it. So I 100% support that. So I thought that's what you'd say, but yeah, if you're where you don't want to be, you've got the power to change it. I mean, nobody's handcuffing you to an office. So you need to be where you need to be, and you will know whether it's good or otherwise.
Exactly. You can't grow in a negative environment.
No.
And something else that I've learned too is, you are essentially the sum of the five closest people to you. So if you have five positive, high-influence friends, for some reason you will also be the same thing.
That sounds like a John McGrath-ism. I think I've heard that from John.
I'm not sure. I've heard it a few times.
It's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, and I liken that the same thing. I've got friends that go to the gym, so because they're friends of mine at the gym, I feel like I want to keep fit because they do it. So for some subconsciously, I just want to do that. So if five of my top friends are gym goers, I'm going to want to eat healthy at least if I'm with them. I'm not going to go and pig out while they're eating healthy. So that's a big thing. Actually, one thing I do want to cover, which you were talking about, growth and things to do, is another thing I'm known for is becoming an implementation king, because when I found out what I had to do for my journey and growing the business, I understood that I had to just implement like a maniac.
Yeah.
There's things that I was missing that I had to do. So part of my ideal week was the black work, which was, working on the business. And I made sure that every Friday for 2 hours I'd leave the office, because when I'm in the office, you'll get interrupted and people come over and say, hey, did you get that email? Or did you, they just talk too much. So I'd have to leave, and I went to the local Starbucks. And I had my computer and I had the stuff that I wanted to focus on and expand and implement. And I'd implement three things that week, or try to implement three things that week. So then by the following Friday, I'd go back there and go, right, did I do that? Did I delegate this? Did I complete that task? Yes. So tick, tick, tick. Right, let's do another three. And that's how I managed to grow my business. So whether you're a salesperson or you're a business owner, we all have to do things to improve. So, if you're a salesperson, you need to get some good letters. You have to implement some systems. You've got to get some more leads, so maybe focus on getting 10 people today and, another 5 SMSs out tomorrow or something like that.
Yeah.
So I learned that if you implement three things every week, which really isn't that much, by the end of the year I implemented 150 changes to my business.
Wow.
And that's basically what 2X to 3X, whatever I was doing. And I'm moving that forward now into obviously helping the team grow and helping the staff grow and implementing three things a week for them. So implementation is king. That's a big thing. We get all these ideas from podcasts and from conferences and things that we hear, but we don't actually put into practice. So one thing I did was grab a book. I've got a 101 list at the back, so I can write all my little notes at the front, but my back is the, I want to do these things, and they're the ones I tick off every Friday.
Nice. I love it. One thing I've noticed, Edgar, in speaking to top performers is that they've all been into training and they're all still great at training. They still have CDs or they listen to podcasts or they listen to training stuff in their car. They go to events. And so many, I listened to Garth Murkowski. We did an interview last week, and Garth from Campbelltown in New South, and he was telling us how Jim Rohn was such a big influence on him. Some of my early things are definitely Jim Rohn. I got a lot from Tony Robbins. I never went to any of his events, but I just really liked Tony's energy. Somebody was talking about you were talking about Peter Gilchrist, but we're talking about Peter Gilchrist the other day, and Peter's been around for for so long, and he does it so well, and he just sells the message so clearly. Who are some of your mentors and heroes? Not necessarily real estate trainers, but who are the people you look up to that inspire you?
All right, really good question, Ray. So these are the people that are, they're not necessarily real estate related, like you said. But these are the people that I've learned things from. And Peter Gilchrist is one of them, obviously, because that's a person from Noosa. So it was Peter, John, and I in Noosa that brainstormed this thing. What I love about Peter Gilchrist is he's like me. So if anyone knows me, they know I say it how it is. There's no BS. I'm the same with the owners and clients and buyers. I'm not pushy. I'll just tell the truth. And my friends love it because I say, what do you like what I'm wearing? I'll say yes or no. There's no gray area. Actually, and that's one thing I learned too. For a lot of people, if you want to make a decision, this is the quickest way to do it. It's either a yes or a no. There is no such thing as a maybe, because if you have a maybe, it means there's some doubt. So that's a no.
Yeah.
So if you go with your gut, it's like, yep, I want to do that, then go for it. And you always make a good decision. If you have a maybe or a no, just don't do it. And if you stick to that, you'll always make, you'll have no regrets essentially.
Yeah.
But I'm just very to the point. I'm honest. You ask me a question, you're going to get the answer.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about Peter. I think that's why I connected with him. The person that I also love, which is like a personality thing for me, is Richard Branson. I've read a lot of his books, and I love the way that he helps so many people. And that's one thing I wanted to do was give back. And I love his style, and he has fun, which is what I like to do, because real estate isn't my life. It just funds my lifestyle. So I like to have fun.
And what Sir Richard will give you at the moment is a ride into space. How much money is it?
Isn't it $250,000 or is it more than that?
Is it? Would you do it? Like, if money wasn't an object, would you do it? I don't know that I'd do it.
Yeah, I'll probably let you go first and I'd take the second trip. But if money is not an object, you have to live life. Like you said, you're only in here once. This is not a test drive.
Have you ever gone skydiving?
Yes, I did that for my birthday.
I wouldn't do that.
It's okay. It's just like real estate. To be honest, they say you need in real estate 5 seconds of courage to ask for the business or close a deal or ask for a listing.
Yeah.
Same thing. Once I open the ride up there in the plane is nothing. Once I open the door, it's just 5 seconds of courage to step off. And once you're there, there's nothing you can do about it. You're gonna fall, and you have to put some trust into them.
Well, it's like me asking you for that prospecting letter, because my mantra is the answer's always no until you ask.
Yeah, and it's easy to ask for forgiveness and
that's
permission.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Richard
Branson, Peter Gilchrist, who else?
Donald Trump. The thing I learned from Donald Trump, I read his books, and as a person or his personality, it's probably not the way that I want to run business, and he runs it successfully, but I prefer the way Richard Branson does it. It's fun, it's interactive. But what I learned from his book and Donald Trump is that he's very, very focused, which is what I love.
Yeah.
And also I got this when I was doing that Million Dollar Year, because you get so many phone calls. In his book, he says that he always calls back at 11 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, and 5. He spends half an hour doing callbacks. Between those other times, he's purely just business. He just does whatever he's got to do. He doesn't answer his phone, and he just calls you back for half an hour at 11 to 11:30, 1 to 1:30, 3 to 3:30, 5 to 5:30. And I thought, that is fantastic, because that tied in with my ideal week and my KPIs, and it helped me grow my business. So for someone else that's listening to this, I think if you're going to allocate some time to prospecting, the first thing that happens when you have some chaos, because we all get chaos in that day, the first thing you do is you either think, oh, I'll move that, I'll do that later. And you always make the prospecting part of your day suffer, yet the prospecting part of your day is the most effective and most dollar productive and most important part of your day. So you're essentially breaking your own appointment with yourself.
Yeah.
So you should never do that. So I've learned, keep the phone off, turn it on silent, upside down. Now that if you have an assistant, just on your messages, I change mine every day. Thanks for calling Edgar from that group. Look, if you can't get me, I'm busy doing something, please call my associate agent April on this number. And they'll call her. So I never lose any business, because one fear I had was, oh, but everybody wants to talk to me. They all want me. It's me.
Yep.
And I had to
What do they call that? Superhero syndrome. Nobody can do it as well as me. I'm too scared to delegate. Yeah.
And I thought, you know, well, because I'm the one doing it all, they're going to want me. If they don't get me, they're going to choose someone else.
Yeah.
And as soon as I learned to delegate that, and you know, and just call it an Edgar Maslow team, and you know, and April helps me in that. When April talks to clients, it's Eddie and I, and when I talk to them, it's April and I.
Yep.
They understood that we're a team, so if they don't get me, they're fully confident in what she does. So I had to learn to just delegate and let go a little bit. So I'm not sure if I went off topic, but that's one thing I learned from Donald Trump was just allocate time to callback and do your callbacks then. So something I learned from him.
The question I asked before, what advice would you give to a rookie or somebody starting out? If you asked me that question, I would say that. I would say build relationships, obviously, because everybody I talk to, that's just been their magic formula. I would say, and you said it, that's the most important part of your day. That's the most productive and lucrative part of your day. That's going to influence your success. So make sure, you know, we talk about putting the big rocks in the jar first, et cetera, but make sure you do that prospecting and just block out 9 to 11 and don't rob yourself from that, because if you say yes to something else in that time, you're saying no to the number one money-making activity that you could be doing. So that's my 2 cents on that.
And here's my other 2 cents as well, is for the new staff that I've got. So the lady that started in Brisbane a few weeks ago, I said, because you've got no other clients to manage, you've got no open houses to do, you don't have to worry about buyer inspections, you know, you're starting from a clean slate. All you have to focus on, and this is for the newbies as well, and not really the newbies, anyone that isn't even where they want to be right now, if you're not doing anything that's really productive, the only thing you should focus on, and rather than doing 9 to 11, 8 hours of prospecting. You've got nothing else to do anyway. Prospect your butt off. And then when you get some listings, adjust your ideal day. And, you know, you've got to add some appointments and add some listings and open houses. But if you've got nothing else to do, you shouldn't be doing anything apart from prospecting.
And then you'll be as busy as you could possibly imagine, or even more so.
Absolutely right. So, you know, going back to that Sold magazine when they followed me, I thought, I'm going to need that. Whatever I don't do in 60 to 90 days is going to reflect in 60 to 90 days.
Yeah.
I thought if I start in October, that's October, November, December, so January, it should start coming in. The funny thing is, because I hit the ground so hard and just kept going, by mid-November, we actually got up to about 30-something listings and we actually started doing really well.
Yeah.
So so if you're putting the effort, I think it reaps a benefit soon. So that's all. And for that first month and a half, that's all we did. We just prospected our butts off, called everyone we could possibly find numbers for, and that was our first thing. We just called everyone we could, and just try to go and see them face to face.
Yeah.
And that's something I think you need to do. Just do that.
It's funny, isn't it? In business, if you set up a store selling things, you've got to go and buy your stock, sit it on the shelves, market it, and sell it. But we can leverage our skill and our experience or our courage, and perhaps we can leverage knowing actually what we should be doing to go out and get our stock, which is listings, and then sell them and make money. I know you said, you know, it's not about the money, but it kind of is.
The money funds your life, so you need to understand what it's funding, I think, is what I want to say. You know,
absolutely.
You can't just have money in the bank and not use it. You need to use it to have something.
Yep.
You need to find that something.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. I just like to call it what it is, I guess. But our time is up. I always try to keep these under 30 or 40 minutes, and we've even gone over that, and I could talk for hours. But I just want to say thank you. You've given us so many great ideas. I'd love to post those letters to, or the letters that you're going to give me to the show notes. And as I mentioned before, if you'd like to find out more, if you'd like to learn about Edgar's business, reach out to Edgar. If you'd like to learn more about what he's doing behind the scenes and how he's helping people and the industry in general, what's the best website to go to, Edgar?
Probably go to the one that I'm personalised for myself at the moment, which is www.edgarnatalo.com, and that'll have, you know, the freebie stuff, a bit of info on me, some videos. I think it's even got videos from that $1 million year, as well as the mentor program if you want to do that. In fact, what I might even do for you, Ray, is anyone that wants to join it, I might give them – they can join it for a month and try it if they like it, continue if they don't like it, not. So I'll get the guys to do a one-month free trial.
Awesome.
They'll get their KPIs and I think the first letter or something in that.
Okay, fantastic. Well, people can check it out at edgarnatalo.com. Thank you so much, buddy. I'll post all of that info to the website, and I look forward to talking to you shortly.
That's okay. I hope I inspired someone at least. If I changed one career, I'm happy for today.
Oh, mate, it was great.
No problem. I'm Edgar Natalo, and you've been listening to the Top Agents Playbook podcast.
You've been listening to the Top Agents Playbook podcast. For show notes from this episode, recent podcasts, and lots more, go to topagentsplaybook.com.